Welcome to the Business of Sustainability podcast from Future Plus, where smart businesses turn sustainability challenges into a competitive advantage. I'm Alex Smith, bringing you real stories from leaders who've transformed ESG pressures into opportunities for growth, innovation, and a stronger market position. Today, we are delighted to speak to Paul Hayes, CEO of Cornerstone Healthcare. Paul, welcome. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and all about Cornerstone?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Hi, Alex. Thank you for having me here today. It's a pleasure to join you. So, yeah, my name's Paul Hayes and I'm the Group Chief Executive of an organisation called Cornerstone Healthcare. And Cornerstone is a care provider and we provide complex care services for people with very specialised needs. So we look after people who have very complex dementias, but not the type of dementia that you may find in a generalised nursing setting. It would tend to be people who have very challenging behaviour or communication needs alongside their dementia, things like early onset dementia or Korsakoff's or frontal lobe or PICs, which are the rarer types of dementia. Also, we look after people with neurodegenerative conditions. By that, we mean things like Huntington's disease, people with brain injury and people with rehab needs as well. And we operate services across the South and Southwest.
Amazing. I'm sure we can dig into that a little bit more. How did you get into doing this and how did you become CEO of Cornerstone Healthcare? What did that look like?
Okay. So, well, it began when I was, when I just left school, actually, and I had just gone to start my A-levels and I got a job washing up in the kitchen of a care home after college. And it was all new to me. I had really no concept of care homes particularly or what went on in them. And I used to spend ages after my shift talking to the residents and just was fascinated by it. So I asked if I could become a care assistant, which I did. And then within about couple of months I gave up my A-levels and went to be a care assistant full-time instead because I just loved it. It just fascinated me that there was this job you could do where you can immerse yourself in human connections and being with people in this sense every day. And so yeah, that's how it all started, working as a care assistant. And from there I went on to work in social work. And then I became a care home manager when I was in my sort of early to mid 20s. And that was a real a real way to kind of grow and develop on the job. And yeah, it was fascinating. And I think, you know, one of the things about being a registered manager of a care home is I found, and I still believe it's the toughest job in the sector. And even though, you know, I've been fortunate enough to advance my own career and move on, you know, up the ladder, so to speak, in terms of seniority, wherever I work and have worked, I always champion the role of the home manager because that's a tough job. And they can, you know, they set the culture, they set the leadership position for a care home. And they are, you know, such an influence on the way that care is delivered. It's such an important job. So, but from being a care home manager, I went on to kind of progress through regional roles. And I guess for the last 20 something years now, I've been executive director or board director of some of the largest care companies in the United Kingdom. And then I came to Cornerstone as the chief executive 2 years ago to lead a growth phase for Cornerstone, which is what we've been executing on over the last 18 months or so.
Amazing. And so fascinating, I think, when people's journeys don't necessarily fit the traditional or the expected, and yeah, to be able to go in, and I'm sure that the amount of experience that you gain from going through every single one of those roles from care assistant gives an entirely different perspective in your role now, yeah, as to what needs to happen and the importance of different aspects, including, I guess, one of them, sustainability, that we're going to talk about today.
Absolutely. I think that's right. I try to always relate everything back to that experience that I have of what it feels like to be in a position of being a direct carer, and try to make sure that the decisions that we make as a leadership team are always empowering that front line to deliver the very best care that they can.
The care sector, there's lots in the news at the moment. There's lots of pressures. I mean, there's lots of pressures generally in the economy, but, you know, frequently you're hearing about the care sector at the moment, staffing crisis, rising costs, tight margins. And you, again, as a senior leadership, decided to prioritise sustainability in the work that you're doing, which I don't think is necessarily two things that people put together, care homes and that sort of work and sustainability. What is it that led you down that path.
Mm. Well, I think you're right. The care sector is under extraordinary strain, with workforce shortages, rising costs, pressure on margins is pretty relentless. But I actually saw this sustainability as part of the solution rather than a distraction. I think if we want to be here in 10, 20 years' time caring for people with complex needs, then we need a business model that's resilient and future-proof. So sustainability enables us to reduce waste or lower energy costs and to make stronger relationships with commissioners and funders. So rather than it being an add-on, I think it's a core part of how we protect the business and the people that we care for.
I think so much of how we talk about sustainability around you know, diversity and inclusion, the social impact, the economic impact, all fits actually really naturally into the care sector. It's stuff that it just isn't maybe recognised by others as being part of that sustainability piece. And I think you know, you do specialise in caring for people with really complex needs. Is there anything around how the building, and I know that we're going to talk a little bit more about one of your new sites, which I was very lucky to have a look around, but the connection between caring for those people and the buildings and the environment they're in, and why sort of, you know, you have living walls and, you know, green buildings, and it's been, and is there any sort of connection you see between those two things?
Yeah, I think so. I think because our mission is to care for people with the most complex needs who often have been rejected from other care settings because of their level of complexity or challenge, what they need is stability, safety and dignity, and environmental sustainability is really an extension of that same ethos, I think. Greener, healthier environments benefit residents and colleagues with things like better air quality, more natural light, calmer spaces and surroundings. And also that kind of signals to families and commissioners that we're thinking long term, not just about today's care, but what we're leaving behind. And in that sense, I think sustainability and compassionate care link together in that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've mentioned sort of commissioners a couple of times. Are you tending, was some of the push around the regulation around what you're doing, or was it actually knowing that you wanted to build that resilience into the business over that time frame, which led you to go down this path? And it was, you know, about the long-term health of the business as well as, you know, those that you're caring for.
I think that the risk for me was relevance was the biggest risk in terms of energy costs, waste charges, supply chain volatility. If we ignored sustainability or we didn't prioritise that, then actually we're building fragility into the business instead. So beyond financials, there's a moral risk. And I think colleagues, residents, commissioners and partners expect us to lead responsibly. And so if we had stood still, we would lose credibility in that way. So the risk wasn't just about compliance. I think it's about our long-term license to operate as a provider and to grow.
So I was very lucky a couple of weeks ago to visit actually one of the sites in Bristol and to have a tour around the Burren, which is a brand new site. One of the things that I actually came back and spoke to the team and at home about actually, because, you know, I suppose I could be very lucky. I haven't spent a lot of time in care homes, is how the feeling of it, or that, you know, even down to the finishes, felt like something you'd have at home. They didn't feel like a medical setting, but there's a whole host of other things you've done around the environment as well there. Can you sort of, you know, what is it that you built into the Burren to make it as sustainable as it is?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, yeah, I'll tell you about that. But I think just your first point is really interesting and a great observation, because what we want to specifically do is create a place that people can call home. Quite often people that we're supporting have not had that. So they may have been in hospital for a prolonged period. They may have been in and out of other settings. And what we are striving to provide is that long-term home, and to make it feel like a home for them and their families. Because, you know, for families that are coming in to visit loved ones, it's so important for them as well to have an environment that feels that it's not like it's not an institution, like it's a place where you can have permanency and you can live your life in, you know, the way that you can on the terms that you want to.
It was really lovely to see the cafe felt like a cafe. Didn't feel like a food hall, And the tiles in the bathroom were beautiful.
Yeah.
And there was an article I read a very long time ago, which has always stuck with me around the concept of sustainability, is that we used to build things to be beautiful and we sustained them. We're in Somerset House on the Thames at the moment, which is a beautiful,
beautiful
building. you know, the finish, you know, the finishes and the, if you look at the architecture of it, there is a beauty built into it.
Yeah.
And the idea that, that beauty can be sustainable because you want to upkeep it and you want to continue it. Whereas if you build too much efficiency into something, can make it too sleek. People fall out of love with it very quickly. And the classic architecture is nobody falls in, you know, very few to be fairly do people fall in love with a 70s block. very efficient, possibly. But the lack
so
of the amount, you know, by putting something beautiful in, people feel an attachment to it, as you say, and
a pride
and want to be in that environment. And I think that was a really lovely thing that's been built
that's
into
right.
it.
Thank you. Yeah, I think that's right. In terms of its kind of eco credentials, if you like, so it's BREEAM excellent. And has solar panels, heat pumps, living wall, which you saw, which was thriving.
Yes, so, thriving to the point where it's slightly covering up the logo, which I thought was...
But it would be so wrong to chop back a living wall, right? That would just, you can't
absolutely.
Do that. So I get that it looks bold and expensive in terms of developing it, but it does make sense in terms of numbers. So energy efficiency reduces the running costs year on year. Sustainable designs creates that healthier environment, which supports colleague retention and resident well-being. And I think from a reputational perspective, it positions us as an emerging leader in the sector. So there was also a practical dimension to it. So Bristol City Council has made clear that they have a commitment to ESG and to sustainable business. And that ethos runs through the Adult Services Commissioning Framework for new care providers. So by embedding that into the borough from day one, we weren't just building a care home, we're setting ourselves up for success in the local system as well. So that means that when commissioners looked at us, they could see that our alignment, that what we were doing aligned with their long-term priorities as well. So the business case isn't just about payback period, it's about resilience, differentiating ourselves and ensuring that the borough was future-proof to thrive in the commissioning landscape that we're operating in.
Amazing. And you sort of mentioned some really practical things there. So one of the things that is quite a practical application is your waste. Yeah. And you must have quite a complex waste stream, a lot of medical waste that has to go to... how have you managed to sort of deal with that? Because I think, you know, from the work we've done, and we can go into that a little bit more, you've diverted nearly 90% from landfill, which is quite impressive with the sort of what you're dealing with.
No, absolutely. So I think in care, as you know, compliance is non-negotiable. So you can't just switch suppliers or alter waste processes without having strict standards. So the challenge there really was finding partners who could do it sustainably, but safely as well. So getting to 90% wasn't easy. And on the hurdle of food waste, we had to introduce separate food waste collections at every home, retrain staff in kitchens, rethink menus so less ended up in the bin. And yeah, we now send our food waste for recycling every week, and we also recycle cooking oil as well. Sourcing, the challenge was moving away from pre-packaged plastic wrap mills, switching to local suppliers who could deliver fresh goods with minimal packaging, accepting that local supply chains don't always work the same as national ones. But I think the payoff is significant because reduced landfill costs, stronger local supply chains, more resilient operations. And it took persistence, but that's why, yeah, we can now say 90% of our general waste is diverted from landfill, and most of our food is sourced through a short local supply chain, which is brilliant.
Yeah, and this is like, and fresher food as well,
yeah,
which
absolutely.
Again, with linking into the medical care of people
and
having
well-being.
You know, not proper meals, but good quality, sort of hearty, fresh meals. Talking about that progression, and one of the reasons why I came down to the borough was to give you guys your Future Plus Impact Certified Award, which was a really wonderful thing to be able to do.
We were very proud to receive that. Thank you. Yeah.
And, you know, part of that is in the space of a year, you've sort of gone on a Future Plus score from 289, I think, to 321, which is quite an impressive sort of leap.
Yeah.
How did you go through that practically with the team and get that buy-in in order to make that process? Because we know that as a business that we can support a lot of that, but it actually what it takes is a little bit of internal buy-in to then go and do the things.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I think working with Future Plus, working with you, gave us that clarity. And it was a bit of a wake-up call having, you know, the score starting there. So I think it showed us where we were already strong and where we needed to improve. And from there, it was really about setting realistic goals, small goals to start with around waste reduction and energy efficiency, procurement. And the most important thing is bringing people in the organisation along on that journey as well. Sustainability can't exist in the boardroom. It has to be lived out in every single home every day. So that was about training colleagues, listening to their ideas, celebrating their wins. For example, one home reduced food waste by changing portioning practices. And so we shared that story across the group, and then momentum shows that everyone has got a role to play in it.
We often talk to businesses about needing senior leadership, CEO, board buy-in. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really interesting to see that coming the opposite way as well, of actually going down and saying, this is important to us. We tend to find anything that you say is, this is going to be important. We're going to notice it. We want to see progress.
Yep.
It's amazing what actually can happen within teams.
Definitely.
Over a period of time.
Yeah. And you know, the best ideas, and this doesn't just apply to sustainability, the best ideas often come from people who are doing the job every day, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's a long time since I did the job. So I really need to listen to those people that are, because that's the best way to learn.
Yeah, we're constantly telling, you know, whose role is sustainability, and sustainability decision making can be in every single role in a business. It's just understanding what your role means and the decisions that you have the opportunity to make and the ability to have the confidence to change how processes or functions work. And I think having that, again, that support from top down. One of the things we talk about in sustainability quite a lot is you have to be comfortable with a reasonable amount of failure, in as much as you have to try things that sometimes won't work.
Yeah.
But what you'll do, just because the final idea hasn't necessarily worked, actually it's about all of the things that you've learned to get into it.
Yeah.
And you then know how to do it better. It's classic innovation, really.
Yeah.
But as you say, people that are in those roles can identify that so much faster.
Can, yeah, absolutely. it's true.
Much time saving and efficiencies,
and
just giving them the ability to go and be brave about
absolutely. And something I think so empowering and rewarding for them, for the employee, to have felt that they've said something, made a contribution, and then it's been listened to, acted on, and then there's an impact from it. You know, that's pretty good in terms of job satisfaction as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Talking about job satisfaction, you guys also won the Specialist Care Provider of the Year twice, I think, actually. You opened the Burren, which is has created 140 jobs, and you've grown to 378 employees, which is all pretty impressive stuff, especially as we were talking about the sector as it is at the moment. How much of that do you connect back to that sort of overall comprehensive, holistic view of sustainability in the business, and as much as linking it to that social impact and the environmental impact and encouraging people into the sector?
I think that sustainability isn't a side note, it's a thread that runs through us. So the awards we've won, opening the borough and growing the workforce, all of that is underpinned by a culture of responsibility. So integrating sustainability into our DNA allows us to establish trust with colleagues, families, commissioners and investors. And that's what makes our operations more resilient and our workforce more loyal and our partnerships more credible. So we've grown and we've innovated, yes, and we've been recognised. But I think the real story is that sustainability has made those achievements possible. It's not just an enabler, it's a foundation that gives people confidence that we're not only here for today, but for decades ahead. And, you know, in care, retention is everything. Our attrition is almost 10% lower than the national average, according to Skill for Care's latest data. And people want to work for an organisation that reflects their values. So when colleagues see us investing in well-being, in diversity, in greener homes, it tells them that we care about more than the bottom line. And I think that in turn builds loyalty. We've also found that sustainability initiatives give colleagues a sense of pride and purpose, like we were talking about before. They can see the difference that they're making, whether that's reducing waste or supporting local suppliers or working in a building like the Burren. And that sense of shared mission is a real differentiator in a competitive labour market.
Yeah, and I mean, 10% reduction in nutrition, the cost of recruitment is
absolutely
extraordinary.
Yeah,
and that's sort of pointing to one sort of cost saving. Or, but is there any other sort of, as you found as you've gone through this process, any other cost savings or revenue opportunities that you can pinpoint?
I think that beyond that, if you look at the attrition piece in isolation, so every time you lose members of your staff team for whatever reason and you have to rehire, you have to re-induct, but yeah, there's a financial risk, which of course we don't want, and we don't want to be using agency or having workforce shortages. But the quality of care is actually what concerns me the most, because when you lose someone who's working with you, they know your resident group, and we have a long-term resident group, as you know. So relationships really develop between our care support workers, nurses, and our residents. So that cost of losing that continuity and potentially to the delivery of care, to me, far outweighs the financial risks, although of course we want to mitigate those as well. So it's the whole thing. It really is, it underpins so much of the successful delivery of care and what we do.
In the healthcare sector, if CEOs were saying, actually, sustainability, get it, but we just can't afford it right now, is there any advice that you would give in that scenario? I mean, I suppose not even to healthcare sector, but just generally to people who are leading businesses, why actually it isn't necessarily always a cost or an investment or a cost in that isn't going to pay back?
Yep, sure. So I think a couple of things then. I think it's about reframing the thinking around it. So sustainability isn't a cost center, it's risk management, and it can be competitive advantage. So organizations that embrace it, I think, will be the ones that commissioners, funders, colleagues choose to work with. And if you see it only as a cost, then you're missing the bigger picture. I think it's about resilience, reputation, and relevance. And in a sector as challenging as ours, those things are the things that keep you in business. And I think also, don't overthink it and don't wait until you've got the perfect plan, because we didn't. What mattered is taking the first step and being honest about where you're starting from. And I would really recommend working with an organisation like Future Plus, because it's been a significant benefit to us. Sustainability isn't about grand gestures. It's about steady, practical changes that add up over time. And I think the truth is that your colleagues and communities don't expect perfection. They expect progress and sincerity. And if you demonstrate that you're willing to learn and to listen and continually improve, then people will follow you. And for us, that's been the real lesson. I think it's less about having all the answers and more about committing to the journey.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more on the progress over perfection. Sustainability by its very nature is never finished.
No.
You can always do better. As innovation, as regulation, as expectation, as technology improves, as our knowledge improves about what can be done.
Yeah.
And we really encourage, we always talk about there's no line in the sand. You never go from unsustainable to sustainable necessarily.
No, and you're done. No.
It is just that iterate, adapt and improve. Over and over again, which means, although it can sound quite scary that there's not a finish line, but actually for me, I think with much to your point, it's about incremental gain. It's do the things that you can do them as well as you can do them, and then do them better when you get there.
Absolutely.
and actually that's an easier way to manage a process than to try and suddenly get to perfection.
Yeah, exactly right. And I think also, that mirrors exactly the way that we would approach continual improvements in quality, in resident experience, in colleague experience. None of it's ever done. It's all a continual journey. So in that way, sustainability just sits beautifully as another pillar or another extension of everything that you would be doing in an organization like ours, to continually drive performance and improvement anyway.
As you said, it doesn't always go well, these things.
Nope.
there are things that people start and decide that it's not the right way to go. Is there anything that you found over the last sort of year or couple of years that have been missteps or, the classic learning opportunity?
Yeah, sure.
In what you've been doing?
Yeah, I think so. What would I do differently? I think I would have started earlier, but I think also I would have invested sooner in making sustainability part of the culture and not just operations. And I think at first we treated it a little bit too much like a project with targets and checklists, bit to the point we were just saying about, you know, we've got to reach here by then. And I think what I learned is that the real power comes when colleagues see it as part of who we are and when it shapes our daily decisions and not just our board reports. So I would put more energy into the storytelling from the start, and change only sticks when people see themselves in it. And when they hear about small wins in their homes or teams, then that really means something. So I think I'd focus less on the mechanics and more on building that shared sense of purpose and where we're going together. Because in the end, sustainability isn't about reducing waste or saving energy. It's about creating a culture that believes that tomorrow matters.
I think that is beautiful advice. And my very, very last question, although that's a fantastic point to actually finish on, but my very last question to you is, what does the future look like? We talk about ambition a lot at Future Plus and with everybody you speak to, but what does that look like for Cornerstone and for you?
So I think it's to continue the good work that we have done and to build upon that. As we were saying earlier, there's always more to go for. There's always more to do. So that will be a continuation of what happens in our homes every day and our culture and the way that we treat sustainability in the whole sense within our organisation. It will be it will underpin everything that we do in terms of our growth and development, our physical assets in terms of our buildings. And yeah, we will just continue on the mission to show our people and people who work with us how much it means to us and how much importance we place on it.
Amazing. Well, thank you ever so much for everything today. It's been a fascinating conversation. And as always, if you'd like to hear any more about Future Plus, you can find the link at the bottom of this page. And also, if you'd like to find any more information about Cornerstone Healthcare, we'll also put some details in there. But thank you ever so much, Paul. It's been a brilliant conversation.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed it. Thanks, Alex.